just think it's cool when people do that. All right, let's get started today. For those of you who haven't met me yet, I'm Lori Jungling. I've been in the village about four, this is my fourth day, is this Thursday? Yeah. you lose track of time up here. I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I teach at Augustana College, teach religion in my fourth year there, and starting my fifth and moving towards tenure, hopefully, great. I'm now known as the Bonhoeffer lady or the Bonhoeffer person, however you may say it. I've been teaching some stuff on Bonhoeffer over the week. It's a little weird. It's been a very exciting day in the village, you know. We had the evacuation of the hiker, and then we also had llamas. I don't know if you got to see the llamas, but we had llamas come through, and it was very exciting. So when the community lives together in a small remote place and llamas come through, it's very exciting and very new, and change happens, and that's what we'll talk about tomorrow in the tomorrow session, is what happens when the community changes. These are the three sets of questions we've talked about so far over the week. The first question we discussed was, what is community and what ought it be? The second set of questions was, who is in the community and who ought to be in, and how do they get in? The third question we discussed was, how does the community live together, and how ought they? And we looked at all three of these questions through the lens of Bonhoeffer's writings, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Many of you have had the opportunity to see the film the other night about Bonhoeffer's life. If you didn't get a chance to see that, it's out there in the real world somewhere. You can find it. And it's an excellent documentary on who he was and what he did. Basically, he's a German theologian, pastor, and spy during the time of the rise and the fall of the Nazis. Today, what we're going to do is deal with this question. How does, and this is in particular to the Christian community, how does the Christian community live in and with society? With that which is not necessarily considered to be in itself. Now, this is a bit of a distinction here between these two questions. They're really, at the end of the day, for Bonhoeffer and for many Christian theologians, the same question. But what happened in Bonhoeffer's time is something that happens very regularly in our day and age in this country. And that is, church is for church. I go to church on Sundays to meet Jesus. I go to church on Sunday to be uplifted or comforted or cared for or to have fellowship. I go out into the world and do maybe my individual service to others, maybe I'm making quilts or serving at the soup kitchen or something like that. But really, the church, the Christian community, I prefer that word because Bonhoeffer has a distinction there, the Christian community should stay out of public life, should stay out of politics, for example, as if there aren't politics in the church, which we all know to be the case, that there are politics in the church, to stay out of economics and social issues and all those public social, economic, ethical issues that the rest of society is dealing with. And this has a name. It's been called, this phenomenon, it's been called quietism. This idea that the church is the place where you go to hear the word, to hear the gospel, to read the Bible, to engage with other Christians, to be uplifted, to be supported. Yeah, maybe once a week you and the youth group or you and the women's aid group or whatever go and serve at the soup kitchen or do something to help the poor or something like that. But really we need to stay out of politics. And we need to stay out of affecting the social sphere, the political sphere, what's happening in society. Well, that's exactly what happened in Bonhoeffer's time. The church stayed out of it. Except for those who visibly and vocally supported Hitler. They were very much in it. They stood up for Hitler and were all in support of what he was doing. And they wanted to be part of that power process. But much of the church was quiet. They sat back and said and did nothing. For a variety of different reasons. Maybe it was fear. Maybe it was they didn't care. It was ignorance. Maybe it was just, they didn't want to get involved. Maybe they too thought that the Christian church was the place where you go and hear the word and get saved personally, but not something you lived in the public sphere. Are there chairs back there? And for those who can make it up front, there are more chairs up here. Let's see, where was I? Oh, it's quiet. And so the church sat silently by. Well, 6 million Jews were killed and said very little. There were a few. We saw those in the Pastors Emergency League that then later became the Confessing Church that stood up and said no to Hitler. They didn't, however, say very much about what to do, what they called the Jewish problem or the Jewish question. Well, Bonhoeffer had a huge problem with that. And so we are moving now out of discipleship, which asks this question: how does this Christian community live together and how ought they? And focuses on various biblical texts, including the Sermon on the Mount. And we're moving into his, what he had hoped to be, Bonhoeffer's magnum opus. The thing that he wanted to write, the thing that he felt was the only thing that was left undone. He wrote this in a letter to one of his friends. Towards the end of his life, he said, about the only thing I have left accomplished now is to finish my ethics. He never did. What we have are about 13 manuscripts that he wrote over a long period of time during the time that he was acting as a spy or a resistance member and traveling back and forth. He was writing some of these manuscripts that were supposed to be chapters in this book called Ethics. He also wrote some of this while he was in prison. And so some of the manuscripts they have are written on the back of calendar pages and the sides of books and other things where any piece of paper that he could get his hand on, he was taking notes and putting this down. A number of the manuscripts are not finished. For example, the one that we're only going to consider one of them today, it's called The Structure of the Responsible Life. And it is not finished. He doesn't get to the good part. He doesn't talk about what it means to love the neighbor. He gets right up to that point. And there are a number of other ones. Others are finished, but they are first drafts. So he never got a chance to go back. If you are a writer of any sort, you know that you, even now with our computers, we go back and we read it again before we turn it into our publisher or preach it or whoever we give it to. He never got a chance to do that. Some are just notes, notations, little things in corners of pages, that sort of thing. So he never finished this. What happened is after he died, and it was realized that he died, his friend, Bethke, as well as other people, gathered as many of these manuscripts as they could together. And it took him a while. And they published it. And then they published it again under a slightly different form. And every time they published it, it was also published a little bit later in English. This volume is from, again, that Fortress series. It just doesn't have the cover on it that the other ones do. It came with one, but I didn't want to bring it up here. It is the translation of the Bonhoeffer works in Werke in German, which has been put together according to chronology. See, that's the thing. He didn't finish it. He didn't tell anybody how he wanted these chapters organized. He didn't tell them how they were supposed to fit together. He had a couple of different outlines for how he thought he might put it together. But he just kind of, so they put them together here with a in the order that they think he wrote them. And it also, not all of this is his stuff. Most of it is. There's a little bit that has some forward material, introductory material, and then afterward material, timeline, bibliography, that sort of thing. But this is his ethics. It's a little thicker than discipleship, and it's a little thicker than life together, for those of you who saw that one. He took this ethic seriously, which is really interesting to me because he seemed to be a guy who thought we shouldn't be doing ethics. We shouldn't be doing ethics. We shouldn't be trying to decide what is good or what is evil, what is bad, or what is right or wrong. We should just follow Christ. Just do it. Love the neighbor, whatever that meant in any given situation. And then he writes this tome. He wrote this with two motives, for two reasons. One, he was, as he was writing this, trying to work out his own participation in the resistance. I don't necessarily like to say the word justify or defend that participation, but more just work it out for his fellow conspirators, for those who would come after him. He particularly wanted to work it out theologically. Why is this necessary now? This attempt to kill Hitler, this what he called tyrannicide, killing a tyrant. But he also was working this out with the motive of helping the German nation, as well as the West, as well as the church or the Christian community, figure out what was going to come next after the war. While he was writing this, it was 1940, 41, 41 we all know, late 41 we all know America entered the war. Already the Russians had been invited in when Germany attacked them, and the war was not going very well for Germany. And so it was pretty much Bonhoeffer, based on the First World War and based on what he was seeing and experiencing around Europe, pretty much thought that the war would go against Germany and they would lose. Well, what do we do afterwards? And one of the things he wanted to do was write for that reconstruction process. How do we live? How do we rebuild? How do we think about ourselves as community, as Christian community, now that the war is over and rebuilding can start to happen? Those were his two motives in writing this. And so you can see both of them coming out. So that's just a little bit of background of his ethics. The manuscripts are not as accessible as discipleship or life together. They're a little more academic. He doesn't draw on the Bible in the same way. It's always there. At the center of his ethics, in the same way at the center of community, is always Christ. But there are times where Christ may not be mentioned, but he's always there. He's always at the center of his ethics. Before we go any further, however, I want to do a little exercise. It's a little similar to what we did on the first day. But I want to take three words and ask us to think about their definitions. These are words that we use readily all the time, and we often probably don't think about what they mean. The first word is the word ethics. Just write out a definition. What do you think ethics means or is? What is ethics? What does ethics mean? What is it? The second word I'd like you to define is the word freedom. What is it? What does freedom mean? What does it mean to be free? And the third word is responsibility. What does it mean to be responsible? Okay, let's start with the word ethics. Just throw out some words or definitions that you came up with. Just as you hear that word ethics, what do you think it means?
A value system.
A basis for determining right and wrong.
A basis for determining what is right and what is wrong.
Ethics is what we do for the common good of the citizenry.
Okay, so ethics is something we do. And what we do for the common good.
I would say it's not the lawful thing to do, but the morally right thing to do.
So ethics is not necessarily about the law, but about morality.
Right.
And that's very true. We can have laws that are quite unethical. And we can have things that are moral that are not in our legal system. Yeah. Yeah, that's usually when ethics pops its head, right? Is when there's some sort of controversy. If we know what the right and wrong thing to do is, we don't have to talk about it. Everybody just does the right thing, right? At least that's the way it's supposed to work. But and so if everybody's doing the right thing or the good thing, we don't need to talk about it. But when there becomes a controversy, when somebody actually does something that the community or the society says, no, we don't want you to do this, or doesn't do something that they're supposed to do, that's when controversy arises. And so we often don't talk about ethics until there's a big controversy, until some sort of question arises. This question, how do we live together? Or how ought do we live together? How ought we live with other people around us? Good. Anybody else want to share theirs? We're going to discover that Bonhoeffer's understanding of ethics is much different. He probably does, in some part of his mind, want to get rid of ethics altogether, but he knows that that's not possible, at least not in the penultimate reality, which is what we're in. We're in the reality before the final days, before Christ comes again and we all live in perpetual eternal life and abundance and that sort of thing. And so we do need to have something there with which to think about right and wrong, or good and bad. And Bonhoeffer prefers to use the words good and evil. Good and evil, as opposed to good and bad or right or wrong. One could argue, he's certainly not about principles, but his ethics do tend to lead more towards the sense of a value system. What do we value and what don't we value? And of course, for him, as I said before, at the center of his ethics is Christ. It's at the center. That's what the Christian values. That's what drives the Christian's actions or non-actions. And the way it's supposed to work is the Christian is just supposed to follow, just obey. It's not quite as easy as that, though. We're going to come back to freedom and responsibility here in a second, but I want to get started on just a couple of background things. I guess I've been doing background things. In order to understand what he's doing with ethics, we're going to talk a little bit about freedom here, but I want to do a little background, is you have to understand his anthropology, which is just a big fancy word in theological studies, which means how do we understand what it means to be human? All right, this is different than anthropology as an academic discipline. They too are trying to understand what it means to be human, but in specific cultures. Theology looks at anthropology as that big, wide philosophical question, what does it mean to be human? Right? Now, in our society, what it means to be human is what I call the Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers way of being human. How many of you have heard or remember the song Islands in a Stream? That's kind of what this society pictures human beings to be. Individuals born as unique snowflakes or unique creatures who occasionally, if they so desire, are in relationship with each other. But according to this idea, we are islands. And I can separate myself from you, or I can engage in a relationship with you. I can be alone, or I can be connected. But I am an individual island that can choose to be affected or not. So, the islands in the stream being society, that's not working, or being life, I guess, in history, is we're basically atoms bouncing around off of each other, occasionally affecting each other, but we're individuals. Individualism, rugged individualism, that's what Americans are all about. On the other extreme of this, we get the much-hated word from the 1950s, communism. It is here, in communism, where now there are no islands in the stream, there's just the great big blob that is the community. And all individuality is absorbed into the community. So there is no individual. Well, there is. There's just one. It's the community. And everything has been absorbed into it. The individual doesn't have rights or freedoms. The individual lives for the community. And that's the way Marx kind of envisioned it. Stalin and Lenin and those guys, they took it in a completely warped way. But nonetheless, that's kind of what he envisioned, the community working as a whole. So some sociologists see us like this idea of being socially constructed. I don't decide what I'm going to do. I'm basically socially constructed to think in a certain way. The other side, of course, is that we do. We can make rational choices without the help of anybody else, thank you very much, and we're each unique individuals. Why do I tell you all this fun information? I tell you because Bonhoeffer is thinking of human beings in neither way, which is why his ethics and his theology in general is often misunderstood, by particularly by Americans, because he thinks about human beings in a much different way. Human beings are relational. We come out of the womb relational. In fact, we get put into the womb quite relational. Right? You know, granted, there are some technologies that do some interesting things there, but at the end of the day, human beings are relational. We're not islands in the stream. We are individuals who are formed by the community in which we live. How many of you taught yourself potty training? How many of you taught yourself to speak, or to write, or to think about the concepts that we in our culture think about? Every word that we use comes from the society and the culture that we have been raised in. The society, community, and I shouldn't say one community, the communities that we are raised in, that we live in, form us. But guess what? At the same time, the individual is forming the community. The individual, the community needs unique individuals in order to function as a healthy community for Bonhoeffer. Yes, the community forms us. And we can't be an individual without the community. I wouldn't be who I am without the community in which I was raised. And the same goes for all of you. You would not be the unique individual you are without the community. But at the same time, the community can't be the healthy, good community it needs to be without those unique individuals. And so this is this ongoing interrelationship. Now for Bonhoeffer, this is how humans were created. We were created in such a way that we related perfectly to the community, and the community related perfectly to us. Granted, it was a very small community of two people and a bunch of animals in a garden. And they also, as a relationship and as individuals, related perfectly to God. It's the way it was supposed to be. The fall, as Bonhoeffer understands it, is when human beings didn't just disobey God and eat apple or whatever the fruit was. It isn't just that they knew the knowledge of good and evil, it's that they tore apart the relationship. Because in the center of that perfect community was God, or Christ, the Word. And what they did, Adam and Eve, when they ate that apple, is that they decided they could do it on their own without God. And when that happened, it tore the community apart. And that's why there's all the division and all the hatred and all the anger. And Bonhoeffer says that, in fact, what Jesus does in his reconciliation by becoming human, and that's key for Bonhoeffer, by becoming human, by dying on the cross and rising again, Jesus makes it not only possible, but makes it happen for humans to return to their true humanity, back to what they were created to be. Relational, properly relational. Not trying to be islands in the stream, doing it on their own, but neither trying to be or being collapsed into one giant blob, but rather living according to their connections with the community. So it's deeply relational understanding of humanity at center. And I can't do it justice in the short period of time I have here. In part, it's because of, I know this from my own experience. It took me a long time to figure out how radical what he was doing was. And he's not the only one who does this, by the way. Martin Buber is another one. And there's just many sociologists and others. In fact, Bonhoeffer gets this from sociology and philosophy, that lift this up. But we in America in particular are so individualistic, and we have so much at stake to preserve the individual, that any attempt to tie us to the community and make us responsible for the community as part of our very nature, not by choice, but as our nature, sounds like communism or its twin, socialism. And we all know what happens when we use that word. It's seen as an insult. And so what Bonhoeffer is trying to say, and he's again speaking in a completely different context and culture, is that human beings are relational. That's central to his ethics. Absolutely crucial. As is his Christology, that Christ is the center. That Jesus, when he became human, became truly human, and thus makes all humanity truly human. And from God's perspective, this is a done deal. It's done. There's nothing we can do to change it. It's a done deal. from our perspective, because, well, we're trapped in time, it's a transformation process. And it's happening to all of humanity. And Bonhoeffer is very careful to say, you can't point at one individual and say, well, that one's been transformed. No, sorry, you haven't quite made it yet. That's not what it's about. It's God bringing about this true humanity for all of humanity through Jesus Christ. Those two pieces need to be at the center of Bonhoeffer's ethics. They need to drive everything we do when we talk about how do we live together. Christ at the center and human beings as relational creatures. Being put back into proper relationship with God and with one another. All right. Any questions? This one is a little more academic, but it's absolutely crucial in understanding how he's what he's doing here. Okay. Today, what we're going to talk about then is Bonhoeffer's trying to figure out how to respond to Hitler. We're going to be looking at just part of one of the manuscripts. It's called The Structure of the Responsible Life. It's part of a larger manuscript called History and the Good. Don't worry about the titles. But The Structure of the Responsible Life basically says it all. The first two quotes on there are just about kind of setting Bonhoeffer, setting up the argument that he's about to make. The first quote talks about the question of the good. Often when we use the word good, we're talking about some sort of evaluation system. This is good, that's bad. Dinner was good tonight, breakfast was bad yesterday. You know, that kind of thing, or that kind of aesthetic approach. When it comes to ethics, good and bad usually has some sort of moral evaluation attached to it. All right? Bonhoeffer completely redefines the good. He says, no, the good is life. Being good means to live. Good is not a quality, an evaluation criteria of life, but life itself. Life is good, and the good is life. So anything that is not life, or anything that takes away from life, is not good. Right? That's where he starts this whole discussion of the responsible life. The second thing is then he wants to describe this life, this good life. This life lived in answer to the life of Jesus Christ as the yes and no to our life. There what he means is Jesus is the yes to the true humanity that we are supposed to be and will become, and no to that humanity that we became after the fall. This life lived in answer to the life of Jesus Christ, we call responsibility. Responsibility thus means to risk one's life in its wholeness, aware that one's activity is a matter of life and death. Every action, including the cereal I choose to eat in the morning, becomes for Bonhoeffer responsibility. A matter of life and death. You wouldn't think so, whether I eat Cheerios or life. But for him, that's what responsibility means. Now, for the most part, we live our daily lives, caring for others, fulfilling our responsibilities in our marriages, in our families, in our workplaces, in our social organizations that we've become a part of. So we don't even notice that we're thinking about these things. We don't notice that we're being responsible. But in fact, that's responsibility, and we'll define that a little more further in a second. As I'm being responsible, I simultaneously represent, at the same time, I represent Christ before other human beings, and I represent other human beings before Christ. Stop and think about that for a second. Not only do I become Christ for other human beings, but I represent human beings standing before Christ. Now, Bonhoeffer was a German living in that German society. He owned the guilt and the shame of the German people. For him, it wasn't those bad Nazis over there. It was all of Germany. And so he was representing Christ before the German people, and he was representing the German people who had turned so far away before Christ. That's how much he owned what was happening in his own soul. And he made that choice. For those of you who saw the film, you saw him make that choice. He made that choice on the second trip to America. He went once to study. He came back. He had a great time in America, came back with all sorts of fun knowledge. Then later on, when everything was revving up, and he was starting to kind of make a problem of himself in the Third Reich, some of his American friends decided to invite him back to New York and let him teach there. There were some problems there about what he was actually going to do, but mostly he was struggling, should I be here? He got on the boat, he went over there. He's there just a couple of months. And the story goes that as he was struggling about what he should do, he felt like he had abandoned his people, and he had abandoned their guilt. Like he was trying to escape what they had done by going to America. And there are many, not just Jewish theologians and scholars who left Germany. There are many who did that. Paul Tillich is one, but there are others who escaped. But he couldn't do that. He had to turn around. And the story goes that as he was trying to make this decision and really wrestling it out, he sat in the little room that he was living in, and he was a smoker, and he just chain-smoked all night long. So that the next day when the cleaning people came in, or after he left when the cleaning people came in, there was just a pile of cigarette ashes and cigarette butts. Because he was just wrestling this out. And finally he decided he had no choice. If he was going to be part of the reconstruction of Germany, if he was going to be part of the death of civilization, because he believed those were the two possibilities. Either Germany would be defeated and they would need to be reconstructed, or Germany would win and civilization would be ended, at least as they knew it. That's how horrible it was. And he knew he had to be a part of that. He had to be there. He had to own that responsibility for his people in front of Christ and in front of the rest of the world. Very few people were willing to do that. Martin Niemöller is another one, but they're very few. So that's kind of the setup. That's where he's going. That's the theological stuff behind his ethics. I chose this particular article, and we're just going to look at the first two paragraphs because it basically says everything. I chose it because, one, it talks about how he was able to work through tyrannicide, how he was able to work through this notion of... Never said it was okay to kill Hitler, but that he had to kill Hitler. He had to participate in that. Now, the way I've structured this little thing is I gave you the first paragraph of the essay, and then I outlined it for you. The outline is not in the text, but the part in quotes is in the text. Basically, what he says, he's kind of responding to what we talked about yesterday, this idea of just do it. What do? Okay, we live a responsible life. The structure of the responsible life is determined in a twofold manner. Namely, one, by life's bond to human beings and to God. So the first part of the responsible life is life's bond to human beings. The second part is the freedom of one's own life. What do you notice about what Bonhoeffer does with anthropology there, with what does it mean to be human, compared to what we do in our society? Which comes first for him? The bond comes first. Not my freedom as an individual self, not my individual rights. What comes first, what is at the center, is the bond that is naturally part of what it means to be human, the bond between me and the community and me and God. And the community. That's what comes first. Only from that do we get freedom. So freedom is dependent on the bond between human beings. It doesn't come first. It doesn't structure the society first or the community first. It's the result of the bond. It's the consequence of the relationship. It's kind of a weird notion for us. It takes some kind of repuzzling in our brains to start with the bond. The bond that I have, that each of us has with all of humanity, but also our individual bonds, the bonds of marriage, the bonds which we have with our family, bonds that we have with our fellow drivers on the interstate when we're driving out to Holden. I mean, we don't think of that as relationship, but it is. Those bonds that we have with others and the bonds we have with God determine everything. And from that, our individual freedom emerges. Going on, it is this bond of life, that's number one, the bond that I have to others, to human beings and to God, that constitutes the freedom of our own life. That's what makes freedom up. Without this bond and without this freedom, there can be no responsibility. So with the bond itself alone without freedom is this. It's the blob. It's communism. It's having no individuality. You can't have it alone, Bonhoeffer says. But the same thing here. We can't have freedom without the bond. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of islands in the stream occasionally bumping against each other and trying to figure out the conflicts of rights. Bonhoeffer says, first comes the relationship that defines the freedom. In order to be a community, we need to have individuals. In order to be an individual, we need to have the community. It's just another way of saying what I said before. They work together. After he lays that out, he lays out that's the whiteboard on which all of this is written. Then he lays out the four things that make up this responsible life. The bond has two things attached to it. The bond has the form of one, and this is a long word, our long phrase, vicarious representative action. If you've read any of other Bonhoeffer's stuff in the earlier editions, this was deputyship. The idea of deputyship. It's a poor choice of words, and it certainly doesn't reflect what the language that Bonhoeffer uses. He uses specialized language here. The bond has the form of vicarious representative action, and two, being in accordance with reality. I'll explain what these mean in a second. The second part, freedom, exhibits in three, my accountability for my living and acting, and four, in the daring feat of concrete decision. You should read the book, Ethics. It will say venture of concrete decision. The word in German actually means daring feat, taking a risk of acting. Taking the risk actually doing something. This then is the framework within which we have to consider the structure of the responsible life. He spends the rest of the essay laying out what each of these is, each of these four pieces. All right, and I've outlined it for you right there. The bond to human beings and to God, and I always like to add, because Bonhoeffer, as I said in a previous session, he's very anthropocentric, very centered on human beings. And I think he could be challenged in our day and age, particularly now, to include all of creation, the bond to all of creation. What is our relationship, our relationality in relationship to the environment in which we live, to the mountains, the trees, the animals, I just discovered that they're looking for spotted owls in our woods here. They have some Forest Service folks. They have been coming up on a regular basis listening for the spotted owl. Well, I don't know if you know, but the spotted owl is endangered. And if they should happen to hear the spotted owl, everything up here stops. Everything. Because of the Endangered Species Act. Because it's endangered. There is a bond between humans and creation that would have great ramifications. We already had great ramifications by what human beings did to this land in the first place. So I would include all of creation here. It makes things much more chaotic and crazy as we think about this, but nonetheless, I think it's important. But Bonhoeffer is really stuck to just with humans and God. One could add on that first part of the outline, number one, that's when he's talking about community. That's when he's talking about community. The bond starts with community. Has two pieces, vicarious representative action, which simply means acting on behalf of others. Acting on behalf of others. How many of you have or had children? Small children. How many of you changed their diapers? You were being a vicarious representative actor at that point. You were taking care of a child. It's one of the basic responsibilities of life. A father or a mother who is a parent to a child is being, in the old language, a deputy, or one who is acting on behalf of another. At that point in the baby's child in the baby's life, they can't take care of those particular needs. That's why you have potty training, right? So somebody has to act on their behalf. You cleaned up vomit, you dealt with the terrible twos and threes and 13s, you know, all of those things. That's what parenting is. It's acting on behalf of these children who are growing up. Many of you, no doubt, worked, whether in the home or outside of the home, you were, in your work, being a vicarious representative actor. You were doing something on behalf of others. I, as a teacher, am acting on behalf of others by teaching, educating, preparing these college freshmen to college seniors to go out and make a difference. So we all, in our everyday lives, become vicarious representative actors. But Bonhoeffer needs to push that. Because it's not just in our everyday lives. When we take care of our kids and work in our workplace or live in our marriages or act as friends or work in social organizations. It's also in society, as citizens of a particular nation or community or society. How are some of the ways we act as vicarious representative action actors every day when it comes to our society? What are we going to do in November? We're going to vote. As painful as the election process is, and it is indeed painful, although I think Holden Village is a great place to be during an election season because you don't have to watch the ads and all the crap that comes out. It's been wonderful not having to deal with that for a week. But that's what we're doing. Because of the nature of our government system, when we vote, we're acting on behalf of our society. Well, let's suppose we're Bonhoeffer living in a society where a tyrant has taken over. You can't get rid of him by voting. There's probably not going to be a coup, or at least a peaceful transition to a better leadership. You can speak out, but the minute you speak out on the street corner, or as we heard in the radio address, things get cut off. The radio address was stopped. If Bonhoeffer would have written anything explicitly, he wrote a lot implicitly here as well as in discipleship against the Reich, but it's very implicit. You have to listen. He never says anything explicitly against Hitler or any of the Third Reich stuff. There are a couple places where it starts to come out once he's in prison, but he has to be careful. So you reach that point of last resort, that basic necessity of life. Hitler and the Third Reich are removing the basic necessity of life of the Jews, but as the war goes on, also of everyday German citizens who are being forced, conscripted into the military and sent particularly to the Eastern Front, to the Russian Front, which was a suicide mission. I mean, you just, the chances of you coming back from such a thing were very remote. And so Hitler was killing people. And there was no other way, Bonhoeffer believed, to stop it. So here, at this point, vicarious representative action, acting on behalf of others, the others being the Jews, the German people, and all of Europe, and probably America as well, who everybody was fighting in this war, for him meant breaking the law. Breaking the law against killing and participating in the assassination plot. It was the choice of last resort for him. There was nothing else to be done. Some wanted, there were actually three resistance groups. They didn't always communicate well. Maybe that was part of the reason why they didn't succeed. But some of the resistance groups, one just wanted to wait until Hitler was defeated because they knew it was going to be inevitable that he would die or be killed or, you know, something. The war would defeat him. And then they would come in and plan Germany in a new way. Others just wanted to conduct a coup, remove him from his office, and his central circle, Goebbels and some of these other folks, and put somebody else in power. But this group, and then the others kind of joined. If you saw the movie Valkyrie, you got the idea there. If you haven't seen it, it's a good film. Tom Cruise stars in it. And it's really pretty historically accurate about what happens in that final assassination attempt. It wasn't just to assassinate Hitler. It was also to take over Berlin so that they could then put new people in power, because they knew if they killed Hitler, it would just be Goebbels or Himmler or Goering who would step forth, and they were just as bad as Hitler was. So they had to plot kind of a coup attempt on the side. Bonhoeffer chose the one because the others weren't working. They tried. They tried reason. They tried the conscience. They tried duty. They tried so many things, both to the people as well as to Hitler and the others, and nothing worked. This was the last resort. So in order to preserve life, the good, you have to take one life for the sake of the good of the rest of these individuals. The second thing, and this is kind of what I've been saying, the second thing that has to do with the bond there is you need to act according to real life. Not some high and mighty ideal or principle that has no connection to the real world. And not just, you know, kind of self-help plans. You've got to act according to what is real. What is, another word, is appropriate to the situation. How do you know what is appropriate? You have to listen. Bonhoeffer was extremely good at listening not only to people, but to the world around him. Very good. I mean, you can just see it as he writes. He knows the score. He knows that in this case, even though he doesn't say it here, in this case, the only appropriate action is to take down this one man. As hard as that is for us to hear, and as hard as it was for him to do, he wasn't happy about this. There was no joy in this. Which brings me to the next one, the next set part where the individual comes in, the freedom of each person's own life, which involves one being accountable for my life and actions. In other words, taking on the guilt for my own actions. That's what Bonhoeffer did. He went into this assassination attempt knowing that everybody else, except for those in the resistance plot, would consider him guilty. That God may even consider him guilty and condemn him. But vicarious, or by, but this responsible life means being willing to be guilty. Jesus was guilty, and he was willing to be guilty. Bonhoeffer was guilty, and he was willing to be guilty, at least according to the outside world. This is not just feeling bad. I mean, feeling guilt is one thing, but this is being declared guilty from an external source, and he knew. The fourth part of this is basically acting in the daring feat of concrete decision. Making a decision to act. All those people, too scared, too frightened, too caught up in their own lives, too not caring, too ignorant, they didn't act. Somebody had to act, take the risk, stand up, be willing to take the flak. That's why he went so peacefully, both to prison and to his death. Be willing to take whatever the consequences are in your action on behalf of others that's appropriate to the situation. Now, there he gives a little more structure to this love your neighbor. One, you've got to listen to what your neighbor says and figure out what the context is, what's appropriate to the situation. You act on their behalf. You do so knowing that most of the time what you do is not guilt-producing. You're following the law when you don't steal their stuff and actually help them keep it. You're doing what the law says. You're fulfilling the commandment, right? But once in a while, in these extreme situations, you have to break the law. And you have to go against the law, or you have to go against custom or society, and people will yell at you and scream at you and put you on a cross and kill you. And that's what the cross is for Bonhoeffer. It's taking on that life. So the entire structure of a responsible life section is really him working through how he can participate and how others can participate in this tyrannicide. But it's not just for that, because you can apply this structure of responsible life to everyday living, and that's the last quote on there. That's where vocation comes in, the call. Vocation is the place of responsible life. It's the place where we live responsibly. One of the things that was happening, and frankly it still happens today, is that we take the stations in life or the orders of creation, like marriage and others and government, and we make them into God-ordained things. So it used to be thought that monarchy was God's ordained way of ruling the world. Right? And so when people propose democratic ideas, gosh, no, that's against God's will. That's against God's order. It used to be thought that God had designed the world in such a way that certain people should be slaves and certain people should be slave owners. And by the way, we decide who's going to be the slaves according to race or color of skin or where you came from in the world. And that was God's ordained order. Right now in our society, the order of creation that's being lifted up is marriage. God created them to be one man and one woman. That's the ordained order of creation. Any other marriage structure is against God's order. Bonhoeffer says no. I don't think he would be in support of gay marriage, but that's because of the place and time he came from. But he wants to make sure that when we follow our vocations or go into these places of responsible life, that we understand the responsible life is not just living out what the station says. In other words, how do I put this? The responsible life isn't just being in the station of a wife or being in the station of a husband or being holding the office of a father or a mother. Those are the places where we fill out the responsible life. The responsible life is what I just said. Living on behalf of others, appropriate to the situation, being accountable for my own actions and acting in daring feet. Which means that we might have to change the way we order society. And that's just fine for Bonhoeffer. The governments that we've had over the years have not been ordained by God. What's ordained, or what's mandated, that's the language you use, is government, state, not what kind. What's mandated by God is some sort of family relationship, marriage and family, not what it looks like. There have been varieties throughout history, not just in the West, but all over the world, of different ways people have been married and have been family with each other. According to Bonhoeffer, he says, it's not the type. It's that we live out this responsible life in the various family, the four are family, work, government, church, Christian community. And he has reservations as we're talking about. I realize I'm all over, way over time, so I'll let you read that final quote yourself. As you think about this idea of, you know, I didn't ask you to share what your definitions of responsibility and freedom are, or were. But think about your own definitions in relationship to how Bonhoeffer defines those words and what it means to be a Christian from Bonhoeffer's perspective using those words. Freedom for him is freedom for others, not freedom from somebody else's imposition on you. So, all right, I'm sorry I went over. Thank you so much for your attention and for your time. Have a great meal. I guess we're grilling out today. Yeah, I'm excited.